I'm David Delegator. James Lee Burke, the great mystery writer, has written a new book that is less of a thriller than a moral tale about America. James Lee Burke, welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Well, thanks for having me on your show again.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. Your new book, Wayfaring Stranger, is a bit of a departure from previous works of yours that I've read. I mean, you and I have mostly talked about Dave Robichaux books, but one thing that this book seems to have in common with some of the recent Robichaux books is it's an investigation in some ways of the nature of evil.
Yes, sir. I think you've got it. It is. Of course, it's narrated in this case by a character named Weldon Avery Holland, a member of the Holland family about whom I've written for some years. It begins in 1934 with an encounter with Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow, and young Weldon at age 16 has an experience with these two bank robbers that follows him the rest of his life. It follows him to the Battle of the Bulge and then later back to the United States, where he learns that the war isn't over for him. He enters the oil business and discovers that some of the anti-Semitic people that he had faced in the front lines in Europe are still with him.
With Bonnie and Clyde and their numerous appearances in the course of the book, Weldon Holland admires them for an act, at least one act that they committed, a planned break-in to a prison to get a friend out.
Well, Weldon has to make some decisions about what these people represented, and he has several attitudes toward them, but he cannot escape the fact, and no biographer of outlaws can escape the fact, that to anybody's knowledge, no one ever shot his way into a prison
right. In
this country. People shoot their way out. But Clyde Barrow was imprisoned at East Ham Pen, which was a terrible place, at about age 18, and awful things happened to him inside, in large part due to a sadistic guard who encouraged these depraved convicts to attack this kid, because Clyde Barrow was not a very large man. And Barrow said he was going to get even, but he also told three of his partners, his friends in there, that when he got out, he'd come back for him. And he spent 2 years in Eastham. And then when he got out, he met Bonnie, who was a restaurant waitress in East Dallas there, a place called The Bog. It was a rural slum. And they went into East Ham Pen shooting, and they took out three men, one of whom was Raymond Hamilton, who is also in the book. But it's an intriguing story. Raymond Hamilton was executed in the Texas electric chair, but he died with great dignity, and he apologized for his misdeeds. But for young Weldon Holland, it's a lesson, and maybe we forget sometime, that people who can commit evil deeds are not necessarily evil. They still can be redeemed. And later, Weldon, when he comes back from some terrible experiences in Europe, he wandered into an extermination camp inside Nazi Germany and found a young Jewish woman under a pile of corpses. And he and his first sergeant walked 5 days carrying her through snow. And later he married her in Paris and brought her back to this country when he entered the oil business. The book is dedicated to my cousin, my beloved first cousin, Weldon Benbow Buddy Millett, who was one of the best guys I ever knew. He came back from Europe with 3 Purple Hearts, 2 Bronze Stars, and the Silver Star. And my cousin was an extraordinary man. And the fictitious character, the fictional character in the book, is an extraordinary person. Weldon Holland is enamored with the Song of Roland, the wonderful chivalric ballad about Charlemagne's war in the Pyrenees against the Moslem invaders. In reality, that battle of Roncevaux was not between Muslims and Charlemagne's Christians. It was between Charlemagne and the Basque. But medieval poets often used a lot of license. But yeah. Weldon returns to the United States with his Jewish wife, whose family had ties to the Spanish Republic, Republican government, and he becomes the subject of a McCarthy investigation. This was during the time of red baiting. And he also discovers that he's made enemies with some pernicious oil people in Houston and Dallas. But the story is really about what Gore Vidal called the Golden Age of America, the post-World War II era. It was a remarkable time, one of great optimism. But during that period, there were two ways that ordinary people, not even ordinary people, people who were virtually illiterate, unskilled, people who seemed to be condemned to live lives on the margins of society, could walk through a door into not only a magical world, but one that offered them Midas levels of wealth. And one was Hollywood, and the other was the oil business.
After World War II, there was an economic explosion and prosperity and hope, and you don't get the sense that that would have occurred for a Faulkner character before World War II.
I think Faulkner's vision of the world was different. It was far more biblical and mythological in nature. Yeah. That Faulkner's Yakunapatawpha County was really the Garden of Eden after the fall of man. That's what he was always writing about. And people interpret Faulkner mostly as a writer interested in investigating antiquity. But the South that he wrote about was true on some levels, but by and large, it was a romantic recreation. I'm not denigrating Faulkner. He's up there with Chaucer and Milton and Shakespeare. But his historical view is right out of the Old Testament. It's John Calvin.
Immediately after the war, I mean, the situation and environment that Weldon Holland found himself in, was this largely because things were unregulated, that the country didn't know what to do with its opportunities?
That's debatable. That's a very interesting question, and I've never really thought about it a lot. The real issue at the time, if there was any issue about the oil business, was the oil depletion allowance, which was the greatest tax swindle in American history. I think the oil depletion allowance came into existence in 1917, and it finally was rescinded maybe in the 1970s. But the oil companies were given a 27.5% tax break on their income.
The theory being that they were depleting a resource so that their source of income was not going to go on forever.
That's it, exactly. It's an Orwellian use of language.
Right.
The oil they took out of the ground could be declared as a business loss, even though they were making hundreds of millions of dollars out of the sale of that oil. But they were given a 27.5% discount on their tax liability. In this case, it was, you know, obviously a great gift given by the Congress,
right,
or the government. It's one of those situations in which, obviously, the system was corrupted. And it made a great deal of money for a certain group of people at the expense of the American public.
All right. Well, James Lee Burke, thank you so much for being with us today. Again, your new book, Wayfaring Stranger, is a great read, a moral tale for all of us, I think.
Well, thank you. Could I just make one mention about the book?
Yes.
It's the best I've written, and it's far beyond anything I've written previously, but it also contains the best women characters I've written about. Rosita is one. The other is this young woman from Bogalusa, Louisiana, Linda Gale Pine, who goes to Hollywood, and they're not ready for her.
Yeah, she was great.
Great character. Well, thank you for having me on your show again.
All right, thanks so much for being with us. James Lee Burke's new novel, Wayfaring Stranger, is a tale about good and evil, and it's a great read and a story about a time in this country that's been long forgotten. For Around Cincinnati, I'm David Delegater.